guys' take on the fact that the Patriots drafting a quarterback and what that means for Ryan Mallett. So let me hear it.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe John Cooper can fill us in. They took Jimmy Garoppolo, the guy who put up obscene numbers at Eastern Illinois. For those of you who don't remember, Eastern Illinois is also the home of
Tony Romo.
Right. And Sean Payton, for that matter. I saw the kid play in person a couple of years ago. I am certainly not an NFL draft guru, but I thought he was, while he put up gaudy numbers, I found him to be an above-average quarterback and nothing special.
Well, in terms of Ryan Mallettdale, at the end of the day, his contract is up next year. The Patriots are not going to sign him to an extended contract, so they have either got to trade him or pay him big, because this is the end. You know, they can sign Garoppolo to one of those rookie contracts. Mallett's out of his rookie contract next year, so you can't justify Tom Brady with another two or three seasons and having a high-paid backup.
So either trade him, pay him, or bait him.
Or you got to let him go.
Right now they're baiting him. Right now they're kind of dangling him out. They're like, hey, what are you going
to
give me for Ryan Mallett's big old arm?
I would love nothing more than to see Ryan Mallett in a Patriots jersey for the next 10 years.
I would love to see him groomed as Aaron Rodgers' backup.
There you go.
And eventually the starter in Green Bay.
And if it's not Green Bay or New England, I want him to go to a place that fits him and what is going to make him more successful.
Anywhere that's not in the NFC North, yes. I'm fine with that. I do not want to have to play against
him. I don't want to see him with the Texans either.
Let's get John Cooper in here from Saturday Down South. John, I appreciate you coming in on short notice. I thought, there's another good story about John. Oh, that's an interesting angle, John Cooper. So I thought, you know what, we'll just get John Cooper on, and then I don't have to read all your stories and take credit for the information. So welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you all today?
Very good. A busy weekend for the SEC, as usual. The leading conference as far as draftees go. You, like everyone else in the world, had to be surprised, and we were pleasantly surprised, that four Arkansans were taken in the draft.
Absolutely. It's a pleasant surprise. It really was. And, you know, hopefully this is a foundation being laid, and that's something that, you know, Brett Bielema is known for, is developing these guys. And, you know, 1 year in the system, you get some players selected, and then obviously there's going to be some other free agent signings. But, you know, for the future, his track record as far as developing players is excellent. Now, I actually think he's going to be able to get better talent than what he had even in Wisconsin to do that. So, I think Bielema is one of the best producers of talent, one of the best developers in the future.
John, with that being said, how much do you think, in your experience of watching, where a guy that these NFL GMs and coaches know he's a Bielema guy, we can trust that he does X, Y, Z really well, even if maybe it doesn't show up all the time on tapes or in pro days. How much of that happens throughout the NFL with not only Bielema but other coaches knowing they came from a certain system under a certain coach?
Well, I think so. I think it's more of a style of play, and it's more of a mindset. So they know, obviously the NFL is trending towards, it's a big passive league. It's trending towards more of a spread attack, which, you know, historically it's been more of a pro-style minded. And the one thing that, you know, Bielema is really known for is developing talent on the offensive line. And I think that's going to continue. He's a great developer of that. So I think, you know, as far as that goes, his reputation precedes him, and they're going to be fine knowing he came from a system that's very hard-nosed, very pro-style minded, knowing there's a lot of teams, the majority of the teams, certainly in the NFL, will continue to run this style of play in the future. I think it bodes well, and obviously he's got a great reputation for doing so.
John Cooper, SaturdayDownSouth.com, joining us in the zone on the Stickies Rock and Roll Chicken Shack Hotline. One SEC running back taken in the first five rounds, and we have spent a lot of time over the last couple of weeks talking about how running backs have been devalued by the draft because of the lack of long-term success as far as durability goes for many of those guys. It was Trey Mason. That's not surprising. I love him, and he ends up in St. Louis, part of what may be the best draft class of all the teams in the NFL. Were you at all surprised that more running backs were not taken?
Well, Jeremy Hill was a second-round pick.
Oh, I missed him. I'm sorry.
To the Cincinnati Bengals.
He's nasty.
I projected Hill to go off the board.
Okay, only one. One running back taken who was not a felon in the first five rounds. How about that?
Be more specific.
Allegedly. Sorry, Jeremy Hill, who was not a cheap shot artist. How about that? No, okay. I missed him. I guess maybe I blocked him out because I can't stand the guy. Okay, good point. My bad. But anyway, still not a very significant number.
Well, I think, at the end of the day, this was the first running back came off the board a pick before Jeremy Hill. So it was the latest in any NFL draft, certainly over in time. And I think the devaluation of these prospects is going to be an interesting trend to watch moving forward. Now, I do think, obviously, it's cyclical, and I do think next year that changes, certainly with Todd Gurley, maybe T.J. Yeldon, Mike Davis. Those are kind of three to watch in the first round. Certainly is a trend towards next year. But with the league going more of a sole-passing league, I think you're going to see more of these top high school prospects saying, look, you know, I'm awesome at running back, but at the same time, I can transition to safety. Maybe not have that high accolades, but at the same time, maybe I can play longer in the league. So it's going to be an interesting trend to watch moving forward, certainly. But, yeah, every year it's trending down for running backs. They're getting taken later and later.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about that specifically with Corliss Marshall, the University of Arkansas running back slash defensive back slash return specialist. I mean, the kid's got all kinds of upside at a few locations. He's really a dynamic player. But, you know, really, not that he cares what we think. I mean, you can definitely make a strong case if you were his family or the coaches if you want to see him play in the NFL to push him towards playing safety, although he's certainly been an asset at running back.
Well, certainly. I think he would be one to watch, especially when you have such a stacked backfield of Alex Collins and you know, you got guys back there who can carry that rock. But then you have Corliss Marshall, who absolutely flashed, amazing potential. We saw why the coaching staff wants to keep him at running back. And that's very obvious. Certainly, you can make a case for a lot of guys. I think, you know, being a corner, being a safety, possibly even an outside linebacker. Look at Derrick Henry. I mean, he could be an outside linebacker or defensive end. And the longevity, you could argue, his NFL career would be on the defensive side of the ball, but he wants to play running back. So at the end of the day, it's going to be the prospect's decision on what he ultimately wants to play. And that's going to affect where he plays in college and ultimately, obviously, the longevity of his career in the NFL if he's blessed to have one.
I think Derrick Henry can play both ways. Actually, I literally think he could play both ways in the NFL, not just at Alabama. He's the most freakish dude I've ever seen. I do not ever want to see him in person beating up on Arkansas, although I'm sure we will at some point. Which guys did you think went higher than expected? Which guys went lower than expected from the SEC? And one of the guys that stood out to me was Connor Shaw not being drafted. And I know there's some injury issues, but I love his toughness. And I thought, if you're going to try to groom a guy as a leader of an organization, he's a guy that I definitely expected to be drafted at minimum. But wasn't. But as far as highs and lows, who did you think went over what you expected and who went under?
Well, I think there's two players that really stood out in the first round. The first was the 19 overall pick. That's Juwan James, offensive tackle from Tennessee. He wasn't even the left tackle. You know, all the ink really came to Antonio Richardson last year during the season, all SEC hype and so forth. He had a bad year, obviously fell out, didn't even get drafted. Picked up as a free agent. He was an underclassman to go. And then you have Juwan James, who was an absolute stud, gets a first-round pick, which surprised me to death. And then you got Dominique Easley, who probably still would have been taken in a first round by Seattle in the last pick of the first round, but New England grabs him ahead at number 29 overall. This guy's had two ACL surgeries on two different knees. This is a big question mark. It's a concern. Obviously, it's a stretch. So we'll see how that plays out for him. But that's two players that probably were taken higher than obviously they were anticipated. I think another one is Zach Mettenberger, who was taken lower than anticipated. Sixth-round pick, 178th overall to Tennessee. That's actually a pretty good landing spot for him. I thought he would be taken higher. And a prospect I truly love is a seventh-round draft pick is Andre Howe, who's a cornerback from Vanderbilt. I actually thought he had an opportunity to sneak somewhere around the mid-round pick. I think, obviously, Houston Texans got a lot of value by taking Andre Howe, number 216 overall.
Yeah, Mettenberger's had all sorts of red flags through his career. I mean, changing schools, and then I guess there was a report this week that his urine sample either came back strange or didn't come back at all or whatever it was, indicating that, I guess the insinuation was that he was smoking weed leading up to the draft. I just, you know, again, he's got some upside athletically, but, you know, that he had an injury at the end of the year last year and then all the red flags as far as behavior goes. I was surprised, actually. So many people had him rated low just because of all the – You know, my thing is Ryan Mallett, you know, with the, you know, proven performance and arm strength and everything else that goes into it, had a couple of rumors behind the scenes and nothing really bore itself out. He falls to the third round because of it. I don't know why everybody was so disappointed that Mettenberger went as low as he did with all the things that were proven that he had an issue with.
Well, certainly. I mean, obviously the red flags are the reason why he fell so far. But I think talent-wise, if you've interviewed this guy behind closed doors, you get a decent idea of your gut feeling of whether or not he can actually turn the page. Obviously, you know, he had some concerns at Georgia. The diluted urine sample, you know, leading into the combine is a huge concern. It's a red flag. That's why he dropped. I was a little surprised. I actually thought somebody would sneak up, take a little bit bigger risk on a player who has proven that he can play in this level. He's proven that he can be coached up by Cam Cameron, former offensive coordinator in the NFL. So I think, you know, it was a little surprising to me that actually he fell a little bit low. I think another interesting prospect that fell lower was E.J. Gaines from Missouri. He's an all-SEC cornerback, and then here you have a draft full of corners, safeties, wide receivers, and quarterbacks kind of trending towards this entire passing league of the NFL. I thought, you know, E.J. Gaines was another surprising. He went a little bit lower than expected in the sixth round.
John Cooper joining us Saturday down south on the Stickies Rock and Roll Chicken Shack Hotline. You also did a great job of compiling, because this is always the next question, how much are they going to make? You did a good job of compiling what the guys in the first round can expect to make. How do you go about developing these numbers? Where does this come from?
Well, this obviously came from a website that's affiliated with NFL.com. It's called SpotTrack, and then obviously they kind of project these things off of past as far as, you know, what the Players Association has mandated. And it's always interesting to see these signing bonuses roll out, these total contract numbers. These guys are going to make first and second round picks make a minimum of $420,000 for their first year. Obviously, the much larger salaries will follow depending on how their first few years play out. But they're, you know, contractually agreed to make $420,000 just on their contract. So then you have the signing bonus is what really sets these guys off. And obviously, Clowney was projected at $14.5 million. And then always, you know, the fall off to the number two pick was not even $14 million. That was Greg Robinson. So it's always kind of interesting to see these guys, you know, come into a lot of money really quick. Hopefully they preserve it for long term.
I'm surprised that that Clowney deal didn't seem to be done. Like, usually you hear about the deals already done for the number one pick before the draft even goes Thursday night, yeah. You know, that they've already done it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, a lot of times it is done, and then it's agreed upon behind the scenes. But, you know, at the end of the day, this seemed to me all points were, you know, all directions were leading to that it wasn't done. Now, there probably wasn't a lot of turmoil, and they probably decided a week ahead of time, this is our guy. But at the same time, I think this truly was one of the bigger unknowns.
John, let me ask you about position not only position in the draft, but also the position they play. How much of which position they play tweaks the number? So, like, if Jadeveon Clowney was a quarterback instead of being a defensive end at number one, does the money look significantly different, or does it look much the same?
No, it's going to look much the same as far as the signing bonus is concerned.
Okay. And then we talked also about Johnny Manziel. That was one of the big questions. If he went fourth or fifth or sixth versus 22nd where he ended up, I mean, you can basically take Jake Matthews at six, who got a total contract or is expected to get a total contract worth a little over $16 million. Johnny Manziel's is expected to be worth right at half of that at 22. So that gives you an indication of how much money varied for Johnny Manziel's pocket from being taken with that first Cleveland pick versus being taken with the second Cleveland pick of the first round.
Absolutely. And you got to remember again, I mean, the biggest swinger on this factor is a signing bonus. So all these guys are going to make the same on a contractual money base. But the signing bonuses is what really sets apart. Clowney had a $14.5 million, projected to have $14.5 million signing bonus. Johnny Manziel was right at $4.3 million.
Without getting too much into how these contracts work, is the signing bonus, let's just say for Clowney, is that typically split up evenly throughout the life of this first contract that he signs, or is it a big chunk, or is there any advantage or disadvantage in any other way?
No, I mean it's a big trunk. I mean, what he's going to make is the signing bonus and the $420,000 league minimum of the base salary this year.
So, this year,
yeah, it's a big chunk. This year, 2014 cash is going to make $14.9 million. That's projection.
I didn't realize it was that.
Clowney's going to make 14.9. So think about it. If it's okay. Let's just say 15, just for fun. Okay, $15 million. How much of that does he actually put in his bank account after all his agents, managers, taxes? All that gets paid. How much does he actually see? I bet he won't see $5 million.
Well, certainly. I mean, by the time you get through all the handlers and the family, I mean, there's not much that's left over. But, I mean, this is a good-sized chunk of change.
Yeah.
If he blew all this in 1 year of having to pay all this out, I mean, there's bigger repercussions there, certainly. But, you know, between taxes, paying off agents, making sure his mom's taken care of, you know, it's interesting. It's probably be somewhere 5 to 7, maybe 8 to 10. Who knows?
One of the big questions is, will he get a celebrity girlfriend in his first year in the NFL? Because apparently he told a reporter that he's got a thing for Rihanna, which a lot of guys do. But he says, Rihanna, yeah, I'm coming, girl. So apparently he has intentions on trying to hook that up if he can. Hopefully he'll do better than, who was it that got shunned at the car window trying to hit on her? Did you see that video a while back?
I didn't
back?
See it.
I didn't see it. All I know is the Kentucky basketball player, former James Young, was with her at an NBA playoff game, so he might have a little competition.
Well, he's sat right next to her. Wait, how long's the first-round contracts? How long are they worth? I mean, you know, the
rookie contracts are like 3 years, right?
Yeah, they're 3 year minimum.
Is that first and second, third, all of them?
It's all of them.
All of them, a 3 year minimum.
Interesting.
John, the fourth year that you can negotiate through?
Yes, the fourth year is when the big contract comes by. And obviously, if they have big years, I mean, it's like Russell Wilson at Seattle right now, getting paid the league minimum last year, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden he leads into a Super Bowl, so obviously a negotiation under that contract and the renewal amount is going to be huge.
He's the third highest paid quarterback on his roster right now. That's what's crazy about that deal. Anyway.
Absolutely.
John, anything else we missed?
I don't think so, other than the everybody likes to talk about kind of how the Southeastern Conference, you know, really dominates the draft. And if you look, I just ran the numbers on a state-by-state breakdown, and the state of Florida had the most draft picks. And obviously, these are prospects that are from the state of Florida, went to high school there. 44 of the 256 total picks came from the state of Florida. Texas had 25. Georgia had 17. And then Louisiana had 10. So that just gives you an idea of the fertile base and the demographic kind of shift that we've seen from really more of a Big Ten conference the last, you know, decade or so to trending to this SEC model. It's pretty crazy to see the numbers.
Yeah, and what was the number I saw? What, it's been over 10 years or right at 10 years since the Big Ten's had a top 10 pick?
It's been, I believe it's been right around that number. It's crazy. They dominated the draft from like 03 to 08, and then all of a sudden, you know, nothing in these last several years, the top 10 picks.
John, appreciate the thanks for the time. Appreciate it. We'll catch up again soon.